You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello and welcome to episode 18 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And we have lots of fabulous things to discuss with you this week, but first up, I wish to draw attention to the fact that I have a large cuddly toy reindeer sat on my lap. I won't tell you from which establishment that I bought this reindeer in order to not show any sort of shopping preference, but he's cuddly. And it's the run-up to Christmas officially now. Advent has started. I'm cool with this.
There is no escape.
There is no escape. None at all.
The countdown to doom has started.
To be fair, it is very, very soft.
And very, very cuddly. So first, I just wanted to draw people's attention to the Hawkeye initiative before we discuss things like the rest of the news and our Wii U special Q&A. Basically, the Hawkeye initiative was started because if anyone who reads superhero comics has ever noticed, there's some pretty darn crazy ass poses that are inflicted upon female characters. I think the height of this was last year's, as we've previously discussed, the infamous Catwoman cover under the New 52 launch, which saw dimensions and body bending that, well, we're not sure if Catwoman had broken her spine or not. Anyway, the Hawkeye initiative is basically drawing Hawkeye into these more infamous female comic book character poses. This is the Marvel character, but it doesn't matter which superhero comic this is, Hawkeye in stupid poses. And there's been some interesting results so far.
It is quite amusing to see him, to be fair.
Yeah,
it is very funny.
We will be linking to the main Tumblr site for this from the post to go with this episode. But it's quite an eyeful in some instances. yes.
You know what I find interesting? It's basically, this wouldn't be a problem the other way around. If it was female characters taking on male poses, there would not be a problem at all.
Yeah.
No.
It wouldn't be really making a statement. Then again, I think some of the poses that male characters get put into are rather ridiculous at times. They're not necessarily impossible. They just look really stupid.
So some of the male characters have their own stupid tropes, like the whole body size.
Yeah.
Was it Rob Liefeld pictures where people were showing these characters like Captain America with the what he would look like with his shirt off, and it's completely implausible.
Brilliant.
Was he like He-Man on steroids?
Yeah.
And He-Man already looked like he was on steroids when you consider the 80s cartoon.
He wasn't on steroids, he had the power of Grayskull.
That injected He-Man steroids. And Arnold
He-Man and Arnold Schwarzenegger would be standing there to the side saying, seriously, man, you need to see a doctor about that. There's growths there, they're not muscles. That's not right.
I think go back to the Hawkeye pictures. I think the best one that I've seen, and I reblogged this on my personal Tumblr, was it was a take on a Marvel cover, and the only character I could recognise was Black Cat. But basically, the person had not just done Hawkeye as one of the characters, they'd also included like Iron Man, Captain America, and I think somebody else, all in the ridiculous poses that this collection of female Marvel characters had been in. And also put them in feminized versions of their normal costumes. So you've got Captain America in a ill-fitting corset. and because it's a GIF as well, this main image, it like slowly fades to them being almost undressed with just like pants on.
No.
And it looks so funny.
Oh
no. I'm quite fond of the crotch attack. I'm looking at it on the Tumblr. If you scroll down a little bit, posted about 3 hours ago when we're recording this, and it's like, oh dear.
Yes.
It's like, who in hell would attack like that?
I'm going to have nightmares tonight now, aren't I?
I think everyone will after they've clicked this link. That's the joy of it. That's the joy.
Yeah, I'm not sure about joy being the word.
If it makes people laugh, I think there's joy. If it makes people cry, okay, maybe less joy. If it makes people
then
cry...
Then it's a lesson learned.
Which is what we want. Because it's about kind of just a general kind of sexism with female superheroes anyway. Moving on. Forbes, of all places, seemed to report on this first, as far as I could tell. Certainly one of the main sites to. But sci-fi, sci-fi, whatever that science fiction television channel that's available in both the US and the UK is up to. It appears to be they're up to maybe making a Waterworld TV series. You know, Waterworld, that film that came out in the 90s.
With Kevin Costner.
With all that really implausible stuff going on to some extent. And basically Mad Max on water.
It had Dennis Hopper, so not altogether bad.
I mean, it could work, but the question is, why now?
It's just because it's the whole thing, as far as I could tell from reading the article that I read first about this. It's just like, it's IP that's going around, nobody's doing anything with it. It probably wouldn't do to either do a film remake or whatever, because, I mean, it was one of the most expensive films made of all time until, I don't know, like... Who else? I know, maybe Avatar or Titanic was made or something. So on a cost basis, maybe not. But apparently Sci-Fi got some rights to it. And whenever they show the film, at least in the US, apparently it pulls in like something like 400,000 viewers on average. So they're like TV show.
It wasn't a bad concept. I like the idea behind it. I just thought it was poorly executed.
Yes, like a lot of science fiction.
Which makes it perfect for sci-fi.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, this is true. I mean, let's be honest. Has any of us actually watched a sci-fi created program on the Sci-Fi Channel?
Well, I get the chance
to.
No, I don't think anyone really does.
I tried to watch.
They're showing Next Generation in HD at the minute.
Yeah, I'll give them that. That's cool. Yeah, okay.
It's reminding me just how bad some of the early episodes of that are.
No.
And that's as a
Trek fan. But yeah, the whole thing with Waterworld is I just think, it's the IP will be cheap. So they're thinking, oh, we don't have to create an IP. That's got, you know, the Kevin Costner film attached to it. And we can do CG water.
CG everything, surely. I can't imagine them having that much budget to actually build semi-working sort of like weird boat things whizzing about the water. Like, I bet they couldn't afford a whole load of like are they called? The little sort of little power jet type things.
There again, because they're probably going to be doing it obviously in like in a studio and whatnot, that would mean that if they basically just green screened it or something ridiculous like that, that they could have almost like every scene. It's like, you know, almost already done. Just have like a small, almost pool of water.
Well, mind you, I mean, it's quite a detailed thing to do that. So maybe what we'll end up with is Andromeda Syndrome, whereby everything seems to be on the bridge of the ship.
I liked Andromeda to a point.
Yeah, I liked
Andromeda was good.
I couldn't handle it.
To be honest, I've only seen much of like the first season of Andromeda, and so some of it was on the bridge and on the ship and whatnot, but they did actually go down to planets of her.
Yeah. Every time I ever tried to watch it, and all I saw was inside of ship, and it was always the same bit of ship.
To be fair, I always preferred the episodes of Star Trek that was actually based on, like, the starship, rather than, like, on a strange alien colony that has some tiny
difference. At least on Star Trek, they made an attempt to actually have some variation of locale and design within the ship. you know, the holodeck was quite versatile. Even Ten Ford looked different to the rest of the ship, you know.
Yeah.
True.
So, yeah,
if they're going to do Waterworld properly, they can't just have it from, like, you need to see the world, see why it's covered in water, and you need to develop it properly.
The thing is that we know a great deal more about elements of climate change now and than we did back then. So how plausible the sort of science behind it will seem is...
Have you seen much else of sci-fi's original output?
Okay, so maybe...
When it comes to how plausible something has to be.
Yeah.
I actually want to try to watch, is it The Last Guardian or something they've got on there? Or they were advertising the hell out of? Yeah, I tried to watch it.
My mum watches Haven. And that just seems to be... whenever I just walk through with the room when she's watching it, I just go, and continue on.
To be honest, we don't have, like, Sky or any extra channels other than, like, Freeview. So, you know, we don't actually get to know about half the, you know, crappy sci-fi stuff. But me and Emily do deign to say that we have taste. I mean, we stayed away from certain things like Sanctuary and Warehouse 13.
Demons, because
Primeval. Yeah. Because they just...
Oh, Jesus, yes.
They didn't look quite right. They looked almost like a... It almost looked like the mainstream tried to target geek culture.
Exactly what they look like. It's someone's idea of what geeks are into.
Yeah.
An approximation.
And it's just, oh, we're not into that.
I think I want to get away from Waterworld now, and I think that I think actually in the way the 90s can keep it, it can stay there.
It sank.
Yeah, it sank. It really did sink.
Got destroyed by Titanic.
Yes.
See, now what would have been interesting is if
Tall Smurfs.
If Waterworld had beneath it Rapture.
Yeah, that would have been
good. And now, yes.
Yes, let's have a Waterworld Bioshock crossover, and then maybe I'll be interested. But they have to do it well. They have to do it very
well.
And there
would have to be Slaughter.
Yeah, and also, actually, Waterworld was meant to be how far into the future originally? Because it's in the future for Bioshock's timeline anyway.
Well,
it was
by quite a bit.
Yeah, so Rapture would have had to have evolved or devolved in quite a manner for it to do a nice crossover with Waterworld. There could be new species. Forget splicing. Entire new
goddamn
species.
Splicers.
Moving on to the other sort of news. This is a little bit technical. It's not that technical, but Cameron is quite pleased with how the first Hobbit film looks at 48 frames per second. That's right. The Hobbit film was not filmed at the regular 24 frames per second one normally gets for television and film. It was filmed at 48 frames per second, so twice the number of frames per second. And basically Cameron, because they're hoping, I think, to start shooting Avatar in 2013, and Cameron's kind of like, oh yeah, 48 frames, yeah, I want that. And I think he might still want to throw 3D at us again as well.
The whole reason for 48 frames a second is because it's double the frame rate because of the so-called, you know, well, the way some 3D TVs and screens will do it is that they'll shutter one frame for one eye and then the other frame for the other to create the illusion of depth.
Yeah.
So they're trying to keep it at 24 frames a second per eye. And, yeah.
But then how's that going to work if you're not watching it in 3D? You're just going to...
Well...
I mean, how are they tying these?
Well, cause, I mean, if you think about it, most TVs can kind of display at, like, 60 hertz and whatnot. Because, you know, video games are at that rate.
Well, a lot of them are. Yeah.
So it's not like it's physically not doable. I think it's an interesting way to go. I know cinema has, for quite a while now, it's been using resolutions way higher than even high definition. It's going like 2K, 4K, mm-hmm. and whatnot. So those are like super, super high definition stuff, and that is probably going to be shooting on RED cameras, and those are kind of almost build-it-yourself type cameras where you kind of buy a separate lens, buy you know, separate parts for the camera and whatnot, and build it. And it's an incredibly expensive way to do it, but it produces just amazing, you know.
At what point footage. Does the human eye and brain just kind of go, I don't care how many frames you've jammed in there, it doesn't mean a flying what's it to what we're processing, baby?
Well, to be fair, I mean, the reason why, you know, films and whatnot, you know, go at 24 or 25 frames per second, depending on kind of which country you're in, is basically because that's the rate at which, if you have it any slower, then it will look like a slideshow. You know, just a fast slideshow, you know, it's jittery and whatnot. But if it's at that, then it actually looks like fluid motion for human eyes.
But to a pigeon, yeah, it still looks incredibly slow.
Oh, yes, yes. Pigeons apparently have a much higher kind of frame rate of their eyes, as it were. So they can...
So if they watch TV and films, incredibly boring to them if they actually stop to watch them. They're just like, dang, nothing's happening. Fudge this. I'm off to eat some bread.
So, oh, cool. Slideshow.
Which is always why, you know, it doesn't matter how fast you go out a signal, it will always move out of the way.
Now, the whole thing with frame rates is, it's like the, you know, when you have a camcorder, or, well, anyone who has a decent phone these days, if you record at 30 frames a second, you know, it will look reasonable. If you record at 60 frames a second, as some phones do, it looks more like camcorder footage than it does film, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. There's There's kind of certain things that they do in cinema that they have kind of traditionally done and that we associate with kind of high quality films and whatnot. So if you kind of go over the amount of frames per second that they usually do, it does look like it's on, you know, a camcorder instead of, you know, a proper movie. And I've noticed that some films, you know, I've kind of noticed like certain shots, they almost did seem like they were a camcorder. So they had the lighting and acting and whatnot. That's all fine. But the frame rate seemed like it was just basically taken from, you know, just a regular camera, which is kind of weird.
And it really annoys me, the thing that they've been doing in the last 5-10 years, that kind of thing, is when there's fast action or explosions or soil being, you know, blasted into the air by shells or anything like that, they go to high-speed camera so you don't get a blur.
Okay, yeah.
And that, to me, it's very jarring when you've had a film and you've been sitting there watching it and it's been at, you know, the conventional frame rate, and then you have explosions going on and it's almost as if you're seeing everything in too sharp.
Okay, yeah. To a certain extent, though, if you plan on slowing the footage down later, like, say, for example, Zack Snyder.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you know, with stuff like Watchmen, where he kind of, you know, just slows it down almost to a crawl, just for like a couple of seconds, and then speeds it up. That is absolutely brilliant if you can do it at like a larger frames per second, because obviously you won't get the stutteriness, and you won't have to do software based slow motion type thing.
Yeah, for stuff like that, yes, and Watchmen is one of my, it's pretty much my favorite superhero film.
I agree with you there on that, and I have a feeling we might be in a minority against the rest of the geek world.
Yeah, I get that feeling as well.
Yeah.
But
I really enjoyed it, yeah.
We, all four of us, really enjoyed it. Yeah. There we go.
And we're right.
I think I'm going to shuffle this along now. So Avatar, probably going to start shooting next year. Karen's drooling over what Peter Jackson's done with The Hobbit. There we go.
Yay, stretch Smurfs.
They're not Smurfs, they're Thundercats. Crossed with Smurfs.
There's that blue cat.
Thunder Smurfs.
Thunder Smurfs, yeah.
Moving on to slightly more serious stuff. and coming back full circle to comics. Basically, Thought Bubble happened last month, and Thought Bubble was the first British Comic Awards. Now, I'm not saying this is necessarily the first ever Comic Awards to be done in Britain. This is the first time there's been one titled the British Comic Awards, because, several of the ones we've previously had have stopped happening. So this was a new one, kind of tied in with Thought Bubble and everything. They'd... we're looking at books from sometime last year to partway through this year. There was obviously, you know, a judging panel and all that sort of thing. And the winners were announced during Thought Bubble. And then essentially, I don't want to use the word shitstorm, but essentially that's kind of what happened over the internet. It sort of kicked off a bit with a part of an interview that Philippa Rice did for the Forbidden Planet blog, which kind of got posted, and then that kind of riled up sort of like the organizers of the award, and then there was various tweetings and Facebookings and bloggings, and it's crazy. But basically, there were five categories, or is it four? I'm trying to count now. Well, they're five, because there was a Hall of Fame category. Basically, there was the Best Comic, Best Book, Emerging Talent, Hall of Fame, and Young People's Comic Awards. And the main argument from people who were not happy with the outcomes, and to a degree the nominations, was that there was hardly any female comics talent represented. Basically, out of everything, out of the winners, only for all those categories, so that was five categories, and only one, well, we'll say four book categories, or four actual comics categories, only one woman got anywhere with that, and that was Jocelyn Fenton, who got won Emerging Talent. Not for anything particular, just, you know, as an emerging comic book creator. And the best comic was won by Bad Machinery, The Case of the Fire Inside, which is by John Allison, and that's published online. Best book was won by Nelson, which is an anthology, which was edited by Rob Davis and Woodrow Phoenix, and that was published by Blank Slate Books. Hall of Fame inductee was Raymond Briggs, who prior to this I hadn't heard of. And the Young People's Comic Awards went to Hilda and the Midnight Giant by Luke Pearson, which was published by No Brow Press. Now that might seem kind of a bit unfair. I think some of the controversy, they revolved around the fact that apparently quite a few members of the judging panel were perhaps a little too involved in the indie scene of British comics to actually be comfortable judging. They had connections to publishers and writers and artists and stuff, so that actually you question whether or not they could fairly judge things due to personal ties. It's like the whole games journalism issues again, but in comics. And obviously there was a lack of representation by female talent, essentially, proportionately. But then again, I mean, comics isn't new here for this. It's certainly not new in this sort of area of things. Like, science fiction book awards could be quite bad for this. Fantasy, well. And actually, if you just look at general fiction awards, tends to be pretty bad for female nominees. In fact, if you look for outside of the award circles, generally it's been agreed that the amount of, despite the fact that there's a lot of female work out there in many different genres, stuff tends to be male led when it comes to what's being reviewed. I mean, I've been looking at this story for about a week, trying to figure out just what really upset people, because there were a lot of, there was a lot of angry tweeting about this, being various parties involved. once the Philippa Rice interview went live. And it's just kind of like, I mean, it does feel a bit imbalanced to myself personally as a lady. But I'm just kind of like, I would perhaps be more keen to criticize the what was happening behind the scenes. I think they could have perhaps, if they'd gone for perhaps a few more independent people for sort of judging.
Yeah.
Then
yeah, definitely.
Things could have been fairer.
Because I mean, I'm not entirely sure about the ratio of men to female talent in the comics industry, whether it is really 1/5 or whether it is far.
I would say because this is obviously indie scene, and there's noticeably far more female creators in indie comics, both in the US and the UK, than there are in the mainstream press. That's what I've noticed. I think one thing which annoyed me a little bit was a comment I saw in one of the various articles about this, was somebody said, oh, Nelson, which won best book, the anthology, oh, a whole load of that was written by women and drawn by women, and it was kind of missing the point. It's like, well, yeah, but not one, a woman hasn't had a standout nomination for a particular piece of work, you know, one woman or one creative team of women hasn't won a big prize.
I mean, was like Rob Davis and Woodrow Phoenix like mentioned in the nominee speech or?
Yeah, I think part of the issue is that I think they had they have connections potentially. Basically, it was a case of any of the people that were either behind writing or publishing the winners. Several of them have connections. I can't specifically say who. Mostly because I don't know, and personally, it's a bit of speculation, I think, on some people's part. But yeah, it's been a slightly polarizing debate. That I'm a member of a Facebook group that's to do with women in comics in the UK, and there was a shitstorm on there about it, and I was just like, whoa, to myself. Wow. And this was women arguing amongst each other about the issue of representation. You know.
Did work have to be submitted, or was it just selected because it had been released?
I think it was selected because it was released. An issue of transparency, the nomination and voting process was also an accusation laid down by various groups that weren't happy with the outcome. And I think the organisers of the awards have kind of said that they'll try to make it more transparent in future. But hopefully it'll continue next year, and just that they'll have learnt from at least the slightly more coherent criticisms. They'll learn what they should perhaps improve upon next year, because it seems like a good idea. In theory. And as we sort of hinted at, promised, or whatever, here's our feature, come Q&A, come special about the Wii U, because Paul and I managed to get our hands on one, because, you know, that we thought we'd like one. We've said previously in episodes we wanted one. We said we pre-ordered one. We've got one. Did we actually get to play on it any time between you listening to this and us recording and Friday? Well, I don't know, did we?
A little bit.
There was a biohazard issue in the bedroom which we had to tackle on Saturday, which took up a significant amount of time. We went Leon S. Kennedy on a bedroom wall.
That does sound sexy.
We used the chemical spray equivalent of a rocket launcher to deal with some mold. However, this was an extensive mold outbreak, and it was a long, arduous process. And so basically we only spent Sunday really getting to grips with the Wii U, and I still doesn't feel like we have. Why didn't we play on it on Friday? Well, funny thing. Somebody ask us about the system update. Go on. Ask us about the system update.
You know you want to.
Go on. What was it? Just a tiny, tiny update?
No, No.
It'll just take a second. We've only got 3 hours. It won't take long.
I think
if you've got an Ethernet cable directly into Nintendo HQ, a 40 gigabyte
Ethernet cable directly into Nintendo's servers, maybe it would have taken a couple of minutes. To put it in proportion, we left it on for half an hour whilst we had tea and stuff on Friday night, and it's still updating. It was at that point that, looking at the tenth of blue kind of filled into this bar,
yeah,
no time estimation,
we kind of worked out that it'd probably finish at about 3 o'clock in the morning.
It was at this point that I said, you know what?
Awesome.
We've got the original Carry On DVD that we haven't watched yet. We'll stick that on.
Sorry, did you say Carry On DVD?
No, Carry.
Oh, Carry.
DVD.
Oh,
well, have you got the Carry On DVD box set as well, have you?
No, we don't. I'm not particularly fond of it.
Yeah, that was momentary confusion there, but I thought, I'm not going to judge.
No, we are talking about the film adaptation of the Stephen King novel, Carry.
Yes. So you weren't watching people screaming, Matron.
No, we really... basically we watched that, and it was less than halfway through after an hour and a half. Okay, so we don't have the greatest of internet connections, but we do have faster than dial-up. So basically it was at that point, I think we watched...
So it is competing with the PS3 then?
Yeah.
I've read on the internet that it's probably just over a gigabyte.
I think it was more than a gigabyte, I think.
How much memory is in there then?
Sorry?
How much memory has it got?
Well, our version has... we've got the premium pack. I'll get there in a minute. For 32 gigabytes. But you can get the regular one for, what was it, 8 gigabyte?
I can't remember.
Yeah, 8 gig. Which isn't memory, it's storage.
Yeah. Mm.
No,
I must be pedantic about that.
Yeah, memory.
I would never forgive myself.
It's just there for the updates, is it?
Yeah, it felt like a bit. Zombie U needed an update before we could play it. So we got Zombie U and we got Batman Arkham City Armored Edition. Batman Arkham City Armored Edition didn't have an update, thank goodness.
That's because it's been out for a year.
but it was a new version of the game. There are differences.
This one is more expensive. I'm neutral.
which do you want to hear about
You're
first?
You're about as neutral as Bill O'Reilly.
Which do you want to hear about first? Zombie U or Batman? Batman Arkham City. Zombie U first?
Zombie U, yeah, because that actually looks quite interesting.
I was going to say the other way around, because Batman, there's probably not that much to talk about, seeing as it, you know, it has been out a while, and it would just be the specific features. But Zombie U could go on longer, because it's an entirely new game. So
okay, we will talk about Batman first. The gadgets are cool. Having them on the gamepad is pretty cool. But directing the remote control Batarang with the Wii U gamepad is a slightly tricky experience.
Would you say it's better or worse than on other consoles?
I would say it's about as tricky as it was on other consoles when you're trying to do Riddler challenges. It's the Riddler challenges.
Are there any new gadgets then?
The whole thing of the Armored Edition is apparently you've got some new armor, Batman and Catwoman do, that basically once you've built up a whole load of combos, it kind of charges the suit, and then if you either press a button on your control on the gamepad or press in the two analog sticks. Which is this electrical charge thing that basically your fists become electrified. It seems to go into detective mode sort of view on the screen, and you're just bashing away.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it does more damage, and basically it has an introduction into the game. It's not just like a tacked on feature that, you know, has like a tiny bit of script.
Alfred and Batman do discuss that there's this new piece of kit.
And they come up with basically the concept behind it is that it stores kinetic energy until you're kind of ready to release it, in which, you know.
Yeah, I would say so far.
That makes sense. So no, that sounds really cool, to be fair.
In the middle of the fight is a bit tricky, and considering the whole combo system in the game, it is even trickier, because you could try to be unleashing it and then basically lose like your 20-plus combo, basically trying to get the special ability to work. But as I said, Catwoman's
yeah.
this. And then this is the interesting part of Catwoman, is she does not have as revealing a costume as a main costume on this Wii U version of the game.
I was actually going to ask about that, because, you know, for someone who was supposed to be all stealthy, having a partially unzipped top just struck me as a little bit...
It didn't also look like she had any support, considering how far down the zippage went.
Yeah, it's like, careful when you're doing those backflips.
Yeah. So, yeah, it actually looks like, A, she's actually got support, and B, were she to take a knife to the... Goodness.
I think Retroid just shivered then.
It actually looks...
Well, we were talking about Catwoman.
It actually looks like Catwoman could stand a stab to the chest, you know, and not die with the current armor, which is, you know, a great plus. It actually looks far more realistic. I mean, I know we're talking about, you know, like a cat burglar here, but yes, it looks far more realistic.
I mean, there's a couple of advantages on the Wii U version. Say, for example, the real-time map, which is actually cool, because, you know, you don't have to go into submenus and whatnot in order to see where you are. And I've noticed, basically, when Emily was actually fighting, like, a load of bad guys, you know, doing her thing, and, you know, the bits where it kind of slows down between the hits?
Yeah.
That is mirrored on the position on the map on the controller.
Oh, that's right. Cool.
Kind of zooms around, going zoop around like clockwise, and then kind of slows down as he as Batman lands a hit, and then kind of zooms back and zooms around. And it is quite it is fun watching it in real time. Also, aiming is a little bit easier because it uses basically the motion controls, a bit like the 3DS version of Ocarina of Time, where you can fine adjust it. For, like, I don't know, shooting arrows and whatnot. It's the same thing with this on Batman. And also, the one thing that I've found is that Batman definitely is capable of basically just taking it off the screen and sticking it onto the controller, playing it solely on there.
Yeah.
Oh, nice one.
However, the signal from where we've got the Wii U to the our bedroom is not... It's not strong enough to get to the bedroom. So we can't...
No.
The Batman in bed.
Yeah, so far I have been slightly disappointed with the range from between the controller and the console itself. Hopefully that might be something that they could do in a future
update. But at the same time, we don't know what other signals that are interfering with it in the house.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, we've obviously got mobile phone signals. We've got, you know...
The router. We've cordless phones.
Yeah, all sorts. So it might be interference from that. It might... be
the range of the console itself, but yeah, that we haven't played Armored Edition enough to figure out what all the gadgets are like, but it's certainly in some ways a lot easier to play because the amount of information you have without having to go into a bazillion submenus.
I can see with that particular game how it would be, considering it has such a large map.
Yeah, I quite like the idea of that.
Yeah.
You're beginning to sway me. Stop talking about it.
Okay, do you want to hear about Zombie U now?
No. Yes, I've heard enough. I'm jealous. Bugger off.
Yeah, go on, because I wanted to play it at the EG Expo, but as I said at the time on the podcast we did about that, the lines were insane.
Yeah, they were.
Basically, Zombie U is perhaps the scariest game I've ever played.
Really?
Yes.
Have you played Fatal Frame 2?
Okay, maybe not.
Ah.
But I have played several versions of the original Resident Evil, and I've played things like Dino Crisis, and I've done completely the original Dead Space, which is damn scary as well.
Can we just say that part of the reason why Zombie U is so scary is very different from most other forms of, you know, kind of gaming. You know, it's not kind of shock, like jumping out and scaring you or anything like that. I think it's more kind of inherent terror than it...
the dread.
Yeah, because there's the zombies, they shuffle around normally, like they shuffle, they're not fast moving most of the time, until they get wind of you, till they spot you, till they maybe see your torch coming around a corner, and then it kind of speeds up. But the game kind of cheats in a way, because you've got a sonar that you can basically press to kind of send out, obviously a sonar impulse, that basically like warns you whether or not there's any zombies in an area. But
as I've found out, that sonar is basically for anything that's living. So rats will show up on the sonar. So you can go into a room, do the sonar, blah, blah, blah. Oh my God, I'm surrounded by them. Look around, nobody there. Oh, it's rats on the floor.
So it's the motion tracker from Aliens.
Yeah, that type of thing.
Yeah.
It's
also scary because of the fact that you think you've only... Okay, so it only looks like you've got one zombie. Then you do find a zombie. And then you think you've only got one zombie. Then whilst you're killing that zombie, because once it's spotted you, you've either got to run to your quickest route of escape or kill it. Preferably with something like a cricket bat, because there's not much ammo in the game. And it's just kind of like, oh, there's just, I've killed it. And then before you know it, there's something behind you chomping on your shoulder.
Bearing in mind that because of the system of, you know, once you die, you're kind of dead. There's kind of no going back to that character. It means that you've actually racked up a high score, or if you just basically like the character that you are at that point in time. Say, for example, when you wake up as a new character, you know, you kind of get assigned like a random name and a random kind of job title of like who you are type thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're doing well as, you know, a female police officer named Maria or whatever, you get bitten. You don't get to play as her again. In fact, you have to actually actively go out and kill Maria in order to progress.
Because she's most likely probably died in the route or on the route of where you're actually trying to head to next. And also, you could potentially, if a zombie follows you into routes heading towards what is essentially a safe house in the game, there's like shortcuts to a safe house. If a zombie follows you and then you get infected whilst near that safe route, when you take that safe route again and you're sort of like in a bit that's just before the safe house, there's your zombie waiting to chomp on your ass when you emerge. I'm not sure yet if zombies can track back to the safe house.
I
hope not, but I would pass them at the moment.
So would you say it's better than Left 4 Dead 2 or Left 4 Dead?
Different kind of game.
Yeah, it's a very different type of game. This one is more of a zombie apocalypse survival simulator.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
See, that's why it appeals. Now, you were saying about the, you know, the atmosphere and the dread. Now, how do you think it would compare to Condemned? Since that's one of the only other games I can think of where it's got that, you're on your own.
I would say it's equal to the original Condemned. If not...
Now I'm interested.
Because it's just... It's the fact that, again, you've got hardly any ammo. And yes, you do have a melee weapon with you most of the time. But it's just kind of like... You do tire out for a bit after... If you've twatted the zombie for about three hits and it hasn't gone down, each subsequent hit, it seems to me, doesn't seem to be as effective. So unless you can hit the zombie in the right bit of the head a couple of strikes a row so that you can then go in for a proper kill hit, that's when your character enters a danger point. Actually, you're more likely to end up finding that you've got a zombie sneaking up behind you whilst this other one's still trying to have a go at you from the front. And you can end up quickly cornered and surrounded because you're just concentrating so much on killing like one zombie. And of course you could try and run, but they follow you pretty well. It isn't until you get to a proper loading screen that a zombie won't follow you, and the areas are actually quite expansive. You realise if you don't die too often. It's just like, yeah.
Also, bearing in mind that it doesn't matter whether you've got full health or, you know, you're on your last little bit. If a zombie manages to wrestle you to the ground, you are dead.
Yeah.
There's no getting back up.
I mean, I have to admit, I think sometimes it seems a bit unfair how, like, you still think you've got quite a bit of health left, and then the zombie seems to be able to go in quite quickly and go in for the final kill.
If it can do it, it will. And I think that adds to the sense of dread as well, the fact that even though you could be, like, you know, on absolute maximum health, you can still get floored by it.
Mm.
There is no kind of safe area, like, kind of thing where it's like you can't go into a room and say, you know, I'm going to be fine because I've got, you know, full health.
I mean, even the safe house that you is your main base of operations for at least the beginning of the game has the potential in one bit to be compromised by zombies. So, yeah. I mean, in a way, the zombies are kind of, I suppose, maybe sort of realistic in the fact that they're slow and ambling until they obviously sense fresh meat. But at the same time, one thing I don't get, it's just the senses seem to be heightened. And that's one thing that always gets me about zombie stuff is when their senses are heightened, even though bits of their body are decaying.
Another thing.
It sounds pretty cool, to be fair.
The light is a rechargeable light. Now, that light, time, it will shut down. So you could be in a darkened area, you know, fighting zombies. If your torch gets that low, it shuts down the light. Has to wait and recharge.
You probably won't stand a chance at this point. You probably will become zombie chow.
And I mean, it's exactly what they say when they say you will die on this. And actually, if you're getting really, really good at this game, there is also survivor mode, or survivor, which basically you play as one character and you get as far through the game as you can.
It's a nice idea.
I think it's certainly something for people who've managed to become quite adept.
I have heard some of the developers are leaving messages to people who have done really well, or, you know, they're making note of you know, what people have managed to do in the game, and they're leaving messages for people to see in the environment, a bit like in a Dark Souls.
Yeah, I mean, actually, when you sort of bring up something like Dark Souls or Demon's Souls or whatever, it does have some sort of similarities with that. But of course, at least in that, you can come back as the same character.
Yeah.
In this, you can't. You might meet your previous character, obviously, as a zombie.
And you also get to meet some of your friends, zombified characters as well. We were quite.
Yes, so I've heard.
Emily, you know, came across a couple of her
people that I've added.
Yeah. Zombified on the game.
Yeah, and I think it does tend to be in areas where they have fallen as well.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Rather than just kind of randomly appearing. So.
Which kind of gives it a more personally terrifying effect, which is basically knowing that one of your friends is kind of dead in a way.
Yeah.
Obviously in the game. like every other zombie, every other zombie game and whatnot, you're kind of fighting basically random strangers who are zombies.
Yeah, random variations of the same kind of models.
Yeah, but this, you know, there's a personal kind of touch to it as well.
One thing I do have a slight issue with is, like, okay, I get that this is an internationally released game, but just after the opening of the game, or after your first real attempt to go out of the safe house, you'll be directed towards Buckingham Palace to get supplies. And I'm just kind of like, okay, I get it. It's an iconic-y kind of every tourist and whatever, and non-British person knows most of the time what Buckingham Palace is. But at the same time, I'm just like, really, do we have to go to the tourist destination for this zombie game? I would have been more impressed if the first destination we went to, because the guy you've got this guy guiding you who's apparently like ex-army or something, or ex-SAS or whatever, and knows comms and hacking of various computer systems, including CCTV, quite well. And he's
an aspect of the game.
The story. And he's like, oh yeah, we'll go to Buckland Pass, get supplies, lots of supplies there. Of course, it's crawling with zombies. And it's like, well, why are you sending me there to get supplies when it's crawling with zombies and I don't have much supplies to begin with?
Well, I think the rationale in the game was that basically it's a fortified position.
Yeah, but it's filled with zombies. He admits, I'm pretty sure at some point, that he's basically like, oh yeah, like, you know, Queen Elizabeth is dead. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, there's a whole kind of conspiracy going back into, you know, like that.
That's it. Time. Now I'm even more interested.
But it's just the fact
it's that... We could send you to Spa, but that's not very iconic. It's got no zombies, but it's not very iconic. Go to Buckingham Palace where everyone's dead.
I would have preferred to have been sent somewhere there that where there's like less chance of zombies and maybe more chance of guns. But I mean, I suppose they are partially playing off of the fact that actually it's England and there aren't that many guns around. Though I am surprised that at least on the sort of minimal difficulty, not the minimal, the sort of like medium difficulty you can do, that basically every time you die, you do start with a handgun. I'm like thinking to myself, there is no way, even if this is in London, which has a lot of gun crime, compared to the rest of the country, there's no way that every single survivor would have at some point stumbled across a handgun.
What I find kind of interesting with the whole, you know, kind of new character type thing is that it always, you know, basically you always regenerate in the safe house as a new character, which just means that you can literally take a couple of steps out the door of the safe house, get killed, and there's automatically another person in there. It's like, how did they get in there?
At least I'm assuming that's what could happen. I'm not sure. I personally didn't want to push it as to how close you could let zombies to the safe house.
But also one of the things about the game is obviously, you know, there's the whole go for the brain type thing with most zombie, you know, games and films. In this one, you know, even if you go for the brain, it will take a couple of hits or a couple of bullets. Which does actually make sense, if you think about it.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, I think it seems to be an excessive amount. I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm usually lining up quite well with my cricket bat to their skulls.
Mm.
And
it takes about 4 or 5 hits to kill one zombie.
Yeah.
So it is quite an effort to survive, which obviously is the kind of point of it. It's not like an action game per se.
Well, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for this week. So it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and at Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Paul, a.k.a. OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. And you can also find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
Okay, it's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, paul-blewett.com, and I'm also on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily, and you can find me on Twitter at ek6891. I've also got a website, which is ek-creations.com. You can find Nerds Assemble, the podcast, on our website, www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. You can find us on Facebook at the Nerds Assemble Podcast. And you can find us on Google Plus at the Nerds Assemble Podcast.
And can I just say that before we go, since we've actually... bought the Wii U, I thought I'd actually give a shout out to Nintendo Network IDs,
really,
which is Kerno 85. That's Kerno 85. Seriously, I'm lonely on there. There's not that many people with a Wii U, so if you've got one, why not?
Why didn't you give your friend codes on the Wii?
Because it's a long series of numbers.
Long.
For which game?
I'm gonna refrain from giving out my Wii U username for the moment. But I will say that if you want to contact us via the various channels that we've just mentioned, if you've got any questions about the Wii U, then feel free and we'll see how best we can answer them. So, yes, it's a good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.